available in more homes than the Pac-12 Network, we are the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online.
And here he goes, Miles Jack.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com.
Liner going to try to sneak it ahead. Touchdown, SC!
We are the Podcast of Champions. Welcome everyone back to the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the 24/7 Sports Network.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com, the USC site on the 24/7 Sports Network. And together, we make the Podcast of Champions, talking all things Pac-12 football. We are coming at you. We are live. We are alive.
We are alive. Maybe.
That is true.
Sort of.
Barely, but we are in Las Vegas.
On the 59th floor of the Mandalay Bay.
Yes, Mandalay Bay, 58th, but sure, very close. Mandalay Bay in my hotel room, got our little remote podcast.
Actually, it's the 59th because they don't count the 13th.
Oh.
Right? No, that would actually make it the 57th, wouldn't it?
Were you doing math early in the podcast?
I was promised there'd be no math.
Yeah, we're in my hotel, a little remote set up here. We even got our mixing board so we can do stuff like...
Herocious.
Which is awesome. Or here.
UCLA Bruins.
Yeah, I can do sounds remotely.
I can't hear any of them because I don't have a set of headphones.
Oh, I could have plugged you some in, but you don't really need to hear them. Anyway, yeah, we're doing the Podcast of Champions after Pac-12 Media Day. It was a long day. Dave and I made it longer by staying out.
We made some poor choices.
Post 3 a.m. There might have been tequila shots at the blackjack table. I don't know. So it was only a few hours of sleep and then really a long day. I knew it was long, David, when I was looking at a tweet. I think it was like a Jason Shear tweet, like kind of commenting on what George Klyavkov said. And it said, you know, it tells you like when the tweet was, and it was 8 hours ago. I'm like, wow, we've been here a long
time.
Yeah,
no, when I was looking at that, well, and I thought that was an interesting thing because the last time something interesting happened at Pac-12 Media Day was also 8 hours before then. Because yes. It was, we were talking about this just a little bit ago, but it was really interesting given how many ADs were in attendance. All of the people who typically ask, like, I don't know, interesting themed questions where they're asking them to all the coaches and all that kind of stuff. Instead, those guys like the national media, the national beat reporters who tend to, you know, this is their time to shine, ask a bunch of questions.
Sure.
They were just talking off the record with the ADs the whole time.
Yeah.
Trying to get the scoop on expansion, get the scoop on the media deal, get the scoop on, you know, whether they're looking at ditching the conference for other leagues. And it just kind of cast a pall where you have all these essentially like, not to cast aspersions because we're only a small step up, but like these idiot bloggers asking all the questions.
Very true. And we're going to get to all that. Just a few housekeeping notes. We are not doing a video for this one on our YouTube channel because we're just doing the audio. Like I said, in the hotel room, just an hour or so after Pac-12 Media Day ended. We'll go over sort of like what was going on there, some of the news and notes that we found, and, you know, obviously what George Klyavkov had to say in the beginning. But if you want to email us questions, we're not going to do questions this week just because we're going to keep this a little shorter. We want to do kind of...
We're also not going to stay conscious. We can't promise.
It's really tough. We are both really hungover.
Guys, I want everyone to understand we were up until... I probably didn't get to sleep until 4 in the morning.
Yes.
We then... George Klyavkov began speaking at 8 a.m. I won't promise that either of us were there for the beginning of the remarks. I won't promise that.
Yeah.
However, we were both there prior to any coach speaking, which means we were there before 8:30. And that's just – that's not good. That's not easy. We're both at the other end of the strip.
Yeah, Resorts World is pretty far from where we are.
Yeah,
and so, it's like a super long walk once you get there.
Yeah. So – we're feeling it, is what I'm saying. We're feeling it. We have designs at doing something similar tonight, which will be hard. So we got to husband our resources.
We'll keep this short. Keep it a tight 45 minutes or so. We'll see. Well, we say that. We won't. But we'll do your questions next week. Pac-12podcast@gmail.com, or if you want to call or text us, 424-532-0678. Tweet us at Pac-12podcast, and You can go to Reddit, you go to our website, Pac-12podcast.com, and of course the Apple Podcasting app. If you leave a review, we'd love to read it for you. We won't do that now. I don't know if we have any new ones, but I don't know if you checked. But it's
okay. I don't think we have any new ones. We haven't for a while. I'll give a quick review of some of the 247 publishers I saw.
Okay.
Adam Munster Tiger looking fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
Just beautiful bald head. Just amazing. Saw Chris Cartman.
I saw him on the video. Looking, I didn't see him in person.
I didn't see him at all because Chris, he is working hard for you, the people. He's not there to gab with the other members of the media. He is there to ask incisive questions, post relevant commentary, record a bunch of videos. He's killing it. I saw Matt Prehm. He was killing it. I saw, who else did I see? I saw Kim Grinnell.
Kim Grinnell was there. Like
Kim Grinnell was killing it.
He holds court a lot.
Yeah, you know? No.
He knows a lot of people.
He's crushing the game. Crushing the game. Just I saw Ryan Abraham.
I was there.
Yeah.
I saw David Woods.
Whew. Yeah, boy, you did.
It was it wasn't pretty. No. But it's good. It was well represented there. And like David said, so it started with George Kliavkov, 8 a.m., and started early. I got in there in like the middle of his talk by the time I got there. But and then, you know, you go back and read the transcripts and stuff, and it was you know, that was sort of the main thing. And then they had the little bit different breakouts for the coaches. They had this was all broadcast live on Pac-12 Network. So they've changed that because before,
yeah,
I talked to someone that went to SEC Media Days and they're like, it's a TV show. You don't get access to the coaches and players. So they treated this more like a TV show, but they still gave us access to the coaches and players. So that was good. But what you would normally would do, there'd be like the front of the room would be the coach, and then the back of the room, there'd be like the two players. And you could bop around. They all talk for the same time. This was, they had Ashley Adamson and Yogi Roth on stage. So it was sort of like they're doing their, and they used to do, those guys would be on a panel somewhere else. And then after, like, Kyle Whittingham would do his main stage thing, then he would go to the Pac-12 Network and do theirs. Like, they kind of combined it. So Ashley and Yogi would ask a couple questions, and then the audience would ask questions. But it was all broadcast live. So if you have Pac-12 Network, you could see it. And then when the coach was done, the two players would come up, and then the coach would go into a side room and do a breakout session. And then when the players were done, they'd go in the side room for a breakout session. Yeah. And, you know, I thought it worked okay. Early on, they fixed it by the time UCLA came around. You were in the breakout room and you could hear over the loudspeakers like what was going on in the main room.
Yeah. So
it screwed up the audio a little bit.
I would say, so from a technical standpoint, there were a few kinks. But I would say both got fixed by the end of the day, which I was impressed by. And I didn't tweet about. I'm only a negative person, not a positive person. They fixed the audio. It was not as there were bad acoustics in the room that you couldn't get around.
Yeah, we're in the nightclub called Zeusk or Zook.
Yeah,
or,
and it's
you're literally in a nightclub.
It's not designed for clarity. It's designed for quantity of noise. And so instead, you're just getting a lot of feedback. It's hard to hear the questions, hard to hear the answers. That you can't get around, and it's hard to do in any kind of venue. But you couldn't hear over the speakers at all. And the best place to hear actually in the early going there was when you were taking a piss in the urinal. Yeah.
It was very clear
hear,
in there.
You could hear very clearly over the speakers in there. They fixed that by the end. I would say from a format standpoint, I understand why they did it for a TV show. And it actually got all the coaches to dress up a little bit nicer. We saw a lot more suit jackets this year than we see in
Years. Not ties, but you know.
A lot of jackets.
Yeah.
A lot of suit jackets. But I would say overall, I didn't really have that much of a problem with how the Pac-12 did it. And I actually like that they, instead of having the coach and the players available at the same time, doing them in parts. Because if you're somebody who's covering that team, you want to hear every word said by everybody. You don't want to just hear, you know, the little bits and pieces that you get in case there's something that you don't uncover or you don't ask. So from like a team coverage standpoint, it makes more sense to do it where you can hear everybody. But overall, I mean, it was a media day. And I think my main takeaway was that it just wasn't, you know, there was some stuff, there was some news and notes, especially early on, but, for the most part, it was just not particularly eventful.
Yeah. So it starts with Kliavkov, and we were, you know, leading up to the last couple of weeks, this was this unofficial deadline of announcing the media rights deal. And we've heard from a bunch of different presidents. You were really adamant in our last show that there was no way in hell there was going to be a media rights deal. And to your credit, like soon after that, the Canzanos and the Wilners of the world were they were setting the expectation that it was coming before they changed that. And they're like, we're hearing it's not going to happen. And we've heard, you know, a bunch of different rumors and stuff with that. But because that's how it started, and Klyavkov's message this morning was kind of interesting, is saying that, I mean, he made it sound like they could have announced a deal, but they didn't want to because they didn't want to take away from the excellent football, you know, with all the teams ranked, with all the quarterbacks ranked high, with the returning Heisman winner, who I guess he didn't name. USC was picked, you know, number one in the media poll and didn't name USC or UCLA in his opening remarks and didn't, you know, mention that, you know, Caleb Williams, USC guy, just like we have a returning Heisman winner. So they sort of like kind of kept away from the USC, UCLA stuff, but also said he wanted to focus on the football and not this media rights thing. And he was pressed later to say, like, well, if you're saying you didn't announce it because you want to focus on football, does that mean you have a deal in place? He said, you're reading too much into that. So, you know, does it mean that there is a deal in place? And it's just, you know, I don't know. But there, that was like, it's kind of clunky, especially for the first time we've heard from him really on the records this year.
I mean, he essentially had 7 months to prepare his comments on this, and that was what came out. I think it would have been, I think he's best served with a measure of just forthright honesty at this point, which that's not the reason you didn't bring up a media deal.
Yeah.
Like, the reason you didn't is because there's nothing that's finalized. And I think you can be honest about that at this point without actually hurting your position that much. You can say, hey, you know, here's the deal. We've had productive discussions with a lot of different media partners, and we haven't settled on the right thing yet. We don't have a huge press of time. Like, there isn't a deadline except one that's self-imposed. We have time to figure this out. And, you know, with economic conditions improving or whatever the hell he wants to say, we feel our position is actually strengthening over time. Like, we'll have a better chance of getting a good deal now than we would have 6 months ago. And maybe that'll be true again in 2 months. But as of right now, we don't have the deal in place that we want. And so that's why I'm not announcing it. Because whatever you think about whether or not they wanted to focus on football today or not, if they had a deal in place that he thought people would be happy with, they'd be shouting it from the rooftops
about
what today was. So it's just, it's again, I was saying this to other people today because we were all kind of talking about it at lunch, but Klyavkov inherited a sinking ship. I mean, there's no getting around that. Larry Scott gave him, you know, a big bag of turds that he had to hold on to and turn into some sort of casserole. But the thing is, he hasn't turned it into a casserole. He's added his own turds.
Yeah.
And that's the problem. And I don't think Klyavkov is a turd of an executive. I think the reality is, if he had been hired in 2009, when was Larry Scott hired? 2009?
8 or 9, yeah.
We'd be looking at a whole different league, I think, because he's not – I get the distinct sense he's a good ideas guy. He's a marketing guy. Like, he gets a lot of things at a fundamental level that Larry Scott didn't. But he's not the guy to do crisis management, I don't think. And that's what they're in, is crisis management. And so much of that is about being as transparent as you can be and managing your message as forthrightly as you can. And I don't think he's done a good job, and I think he continues to do a poor job of that.
Since we're at Vegas, I think tell me if this analogy works. But I was talking to one of the when I was playing blackjack yesterday, I was talking to this guy, and he's like, "Yeah, sometimes you just bet so many times in a row, and you're like, I'm eventually going to win." And you know, with a theory where you can just keep doubling your bet, and you'll eventually. And I feel like that's what Klyavkov has been doing. It's sort of like it was a bad bet. He's given a bad hand, and he like doubled the bet, and that didn't work. You lost. And at this point, like, it's because you've taken this long to say anything, and then when you said something, it really didn't work, in my opinion, at least. Media rights deal, it kind of has to be good. Like, it doesn't, if it's like average, then you're like, why did you wait for this? You know, if it's poor, then you're like, okay, this is why you waited for it, because it sucks.
Yeah.
If it's not really good, if he doesn't have some Hail Mary, and like, to your point, what we've heard from different athletic directors, from some of those national media members we're talking to today, they're saying like, the longer you wait, it seems like there's more people coming to the table. But man, if you're still entertaining bids at this point, not finalizing deals, like, you're not that far along. So, but yeah, you feel like he's doubled his bet, kept losing, and it's going to be the point where you run out of bankroll and you can't double it anymore, and you're just done. And yeah, I feel like that's where we are. Like, he's got to win this last bet somehow.
He's in a tough spot. I think the reality is it's already an embarrassment. It's already taken way too long. It's already been, you know, a national story in a lot of ways. At this point, that should relieve some pressure rather than at it. Like, I do think, but it requires a case to be made. Like, I do think he needs to be public about it. If they are still in the throes of negotiation, like if they're still deep in that, if it's true that like they don't have even the framework of a deal with some combination of networks now, be frank about it and say, look, we don't have a deal yet and we're trying to figure this out still. And we've already gotten to this point, and there's no difference between a deal being struck today on July 21st and a deal being struck on September 21st for our purposes. The league is going to still be here in 2 months. So it behooves us to continue to do our due diligence. And as more partners, I mean, the CW turned out to be a real bitter because they've now actually
they're part of an ACC, like fourth tier or something.
So there is something to this. Wasn't all BS. Like there is this reality that like other entities that you might not consider might want to get involved at some level with athletics. And at this point, given you clearly don't have ESPN as your first tier option or whatever. You clearly don't have a big Fox offer. Well, so at this point,
could have some. Like they could say they have like ESPN for like Friday night and Saturday night games. I guess
my point is they obviously don't have a partner like the Big Ten and SEC have a partner. They obviously don't right now. So it doesn't. The possibility of hitting that home run that everyone says is a home run, like, oh God, you did a great job. Like that doesn't seem realistic. So why not like look around? And again, it's kind of what I've been advocating from the beginning, but pursue the opportunity to get creative with the media deal and continue to, because it's already an embarrassment.
Yeah.
It's at its absolute nadir of embarrassment pretty much. So just whatever, embrace the embarrassment and find a cool UPN offshoot to handle your televised telecast.
My guess is like, say, like their main stuff is like, say it's like, okay, ESPN's got Friday night, this many Friday games and Saturday night games, like in their window that they want, the right. You know, the prime time or the West Coast, you know, 7:30, 7 p.m. kind of thing. And they have like Apple that's agreed to do X amount of inventory for games. But, you know, they might have CW, or maybe NBC comes in late, or so, like they have someone else, but that's going to be more of like
OnlyFans,
lower on the totem pole thing, where that's not, I feel like they're negotiating the part that's not going to move the number much. Like the main course, I feel like they kind of know what that is. Like, I don't think anyone's coming in, and maybe they're trying that, but that would be like the Hail Mary. But if you know, like, okay, it's going to be ESPN and Apple, and we're only going to get 20 million total, so we're trying to like scrape together another 8, 9, whatever. I mean, you could have said something, you know, that's kind of my gut of where they are. But
I don't know. I mean, it's hard to know anything because they haven't shared, and all you hear is sourced reports from a lot of people who have. And I've mentioned this before, and it's not like I'm criticizing any of them personally, but like you're hearing reports from people who have sources on one side of the conversation in a lot of instances, and so it's hard to kind of test what is and what is not. You know. Verifiable truth. But yeah, I mean, it was the Kliavkov stuff was, I won't say interesting. Interesting is far, far, far too, you know, bold of a word, but it was notable. I would say from the coach standpoint, we heard from every single coach, and this might have been due to my fatigued state, but not a whole lot of notable. I would say one big thing that stood out to me was Kyle Whittingham first criticizing the acoustics was awesome.
Yeah. He said something like, what are we in a nightclub? And
we were in a nightclub. Yeah. Yes. And then also he said the funniest thing I've ever heard out of Kyle Whittingham's mouth, which is he was asked the question, what do you think matters more to winning football games, offense or defense? And he said, well, the analytics say, so first off, he's citing analytics.
Good for him.
Second, the analytics say that offense is more important to winning football games than defense. And it wasn't like he said that and then added a but. It was, so that's true.
Yeah.
Offense matters more. And I'm a defensive guy, so I'm always going to want to play good, solid, fundamental defense. But offense matters more. And that's an adjustment we've had to make. And it was like, I mean, and obviously, if you've watched Utah football, that's obvious in how they've performed the last few years, that they've made kind of some adjustments in that area. But it's still kind of wild to hear that from a guy who is you know, known as a pretty, not just a defensive guy, but a guy who gears his team around maintaining a high level of defense, which oftentimes relies upon a, you know, a ball control-y type offense. To hear him say that is, you know, you hear the can't teach an old dog new tricks, but maybe you can teach old Kyle Whittingham some new tricks.
Yeah. No, that I thought he was good in there. And it went – Utah went first. I don't know if they were doing, like, starting the two teams that were in the championship game, and, like, USC end up going second. And I will kind of go over, like, you know, we paid a lot of more attention to the USC's and UCLA's because, you know, that's what we were there
covering. We had a limited attention span to provide.
It really was. I paid much less attention to all the stuff that was going on. But usually USC's at the end. And I don't know if UCLA on the end too, like, but USC's usually at the end. So I'm usually just paying attention because I can't really do my work unless we get like interviews or whatever. But one other thing I wanted to touch on before we jump into some of the other stuff too, I like what we said about Kyle Whittingham. Expansion came up and we had like some San Diego media there.
Yeah.
And I think Klyavkov was asked specifically about, you know, did you promise, you know, the Aztecs that they were going to be in the conference and that's why they sent the letter to leave and then that didn't happen. And then they had the whole fiasco and now they're back in the Mountain West. But and he didn't mention San Diego State by name, but he just said, you know, we didn't tell anybody, everyone, we've been very upfront with the way we were going to do this. And it would be the order is, you know, media rights deal, grant of rights, and then expansion. And if you read some of the tweets that were going on from some of the national media members, there was talk of, you know, and Klyavkov was asked about this, like both schools that are rumored to, you know, expand on, I don't believe are AAU members, and that's like a potential problem. I think it was the Athletic reporting that there was at least, you know, you need 8 out of 10 to agree, and there was at least 2 schools that didn't want expansion. I think Oregon was mentioned just by, you know, making it, you don't want to make it any harder to get to the playoffs. So it doesn't seem like, at least from the reports I've read today, that everyone's agreeing on what expansion should be. It's like San Diego State should be a no-brainer. And they were, you know, there's questions of Merton Hanks about the schedule going to, from 9 games to 8, and what if you had 11 teams instead of 10? And, they, you know, they didn't really get into a lot of detail of that stuff. But there was a bunch of expansion talk, and I think Klyavkov made it clear that expansion is after signing the deal. You got to sign a deal, sign a grant of rights to get everyone locked in, and then they can talk about expansion.
Yeah, it was an answer without answering the question, which assuming that San Diego State was operating in like a, you know, just a crazy Eddie kind of way where they were just letting, we're going to blow up our future with the Mountain West on a lark and hope for the best that we're going to get an offer from the Pac-12 or the Big 12 is impossible to believe if you've got an ounce of brain power. Whether it was Klyavkov himself or underlings or whatever, yeah, giving implausible deniability or whatever, I'm assuming it was more than likely Klyavkov having high-level discussions with San Diego State, potentially presidents of the different universities in the Pac-12 having high-level conversations with San Diego State, I would have to guess, for them to do that. I mean, they nearly blew up their future in the Mountain West, and the Mountain West eventually said, okay, you can come back. But they nearly did that, and they don't do that unless they had really good idea that they were going to end up in the Pac-12. The only way they would have that idea is if somebody in the Pac-12 had told them that.
Right.
So it does. It's another thing from Klyavkov, and this one I get a little bit more because there might be potential like legal problems associated with it, I would have to imagine. So he has to deny in public. But it's again another thing where it's obvious fibbing in public. And whenever you can avoid it, you want to avoid obvious fibbing. Everybody fibs. Everybody's a public figure who has to say a lie every now and then. But the obvious ones, destroy your credibility. And he's been caught now several times just kind of obviously fibbing in public.
Yeah. You get your hand caught in the cookie jar, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, it's just just certain ways he's like, and it's a choice he's making, and like this is the part where I want people to understand, like he's making choices that he thinks are right. It's not just like he's operating in like this weird place, but like last year at Media Day, he made the choice to be kind of bombastic. This year he was not, but last year he was trying to be kind of like, oh, I'm going to be out there and I'm going to say, no, we might go shopping and all that kind of stuff. And he didn't do that. He didn't strike that same tone this year, but it was still like...
He was responding to Yermak last year.
Yeah.
And it's funny, and Yermak this year was not as bold or brash. And Klyavkov, obviously Klyavkov has tail between his legs, so there's not much he could do. He couldn't
pound
his chest about.
He's making a lot of interesting choices on what he's saying in public.
Yeah.
Or not saying.
We were at lunch working on this one, but they also at lunchtime, Yogi interviewed Bill Hancock, the college football playoff executive director.
Hill Bancock,
and then college football playoff selection committee chairman and athletic director Rob Mullins from Oregon was up there.
Mob Rollins,
and also Rick George, the athletic director from Colorado. But
Jake George.
Mullins, I saw, had said something along the lines of like the 10 teams are going to stay together. You know, this is. So we were, again, we were just getting bits and even at this event, getting bits and pieces from other people. And I feel like, normally you'd hear, we wouldn't get like Dave said, we didn't get questions from like Stuart Mandel or Bruce Feldman or Andy Staples or guys like that. I don't know if Andy was there, but, you weren't getting a lot of football ones. Ross Dellinger was there, some national guys, and they're always interested in what's going on. And like I said, I feel like it took away from some of the football, but you got some more interesting kind of quotes, and it's still a confused mess with what's going on with expansion, with the media rights deal.
Yeah.
Are the teams going to stay together? Like it's that you're not going to take the focus away from that and talk about, can Michael Penix Jr. win the Heisman? No. Yeah.
And I think we should hit that right now. This year for the Pac-12, my guess is it's going to be the best year for the Pac-12 since like 2015, 2014, something like that.
Yeah, like when Stanford was really good.
It's going to be the best year in 10 years.
Yeah.
You've got USC, it's a legitimate playoff contender. You've got Washington, which just won 11 games and returns its quarterback, probably a legitimate playoff contender. Yeah. You've got Oregon, which has more talent than anyone in the league, probably a legitimate playoff contender. You've got Utah, just won the league twice in a row, and if Cam Rising is healthy, has every chance to win it again. And then you have Oregon State, which we talked about this. They were like, 6 points away from going 11-1 last year, basically. And UCLA, in avoiding Washington and Oregon, has a chance to sneak a little bit higher than people are expecting.
Could be ranked high. Easy schedule. They're going
to
be.
It's a really easy schedule. Yeah. So you've got something to sell. And it just seemed to me that we talked about this last week, so it wasn't a big surprise that it was casting a pall even without announcing anything.
Yeah.
But all of this stuff that I find extremely boring to talk about, I'm sure you listening out there, you've heard us talked about this to death and it's not particularly interesting to you, but it casts a pall over the entire event that could be an absolute gold mine for what you classically think of as those big preseason features. This would be the thing that Caleb Williams has six things written about him coming out of this that are these big magazine features or whatever. And big time opportunity to pump up your Heisman winner, pump up your, playoff contenders, all that different stuff. Put it on the marketing, put it on the posters that you've got all around. This is the year, the Pac-12, all this kind of stuff that could get people hyped about the season. And, you can massage reporters into asking the crap you want with how you market an event. If you're constantly talking about, we've got, and put the numbers on it. We've got three legitimate contenders for the playoff. And frankly, these two or three teams could also do it. This year, this Pac-12 season is going to be a great season for our league, all this kind of stuff. And that's such a pitch to make to the media who are going to be asking questions. They then have to ask about that. They then have to talk about it more. And I just don't think it was hit very hard.
Yeah.
I don't think, Klyavkov's opening remarks, which I read, and he kind of touched on it, but it was, this should have been the headline item at all times. And instead it's just oh, the Pac-12, we're back again. Here we are.
We're returning. I haven't made the playoff in forever.
We
don't have a deal.
I think there's a lack of confidence, a lack of brand confidence from the league. And it's just, you've had a bad – I think they're accepting a narrative about themselves that is not true. Like, you've had a bad, what is it, 5-6 years? It's been a downturn. But the Pac-12 was one of the best leagues in college football as recently as 10 years ago.
Yeah.
This year, it's going to be, I would think, a top three, top four league. These things are cyclical.
Yeah. I don't think the confidence – I mean, I think if you listen to the athletic directors or you listen to Klyavkov, the confidence that the league is going to be good, not just fine, but, like, good, seems pretty high. But they're not saying anything to, like, back it up. Do you know?
No. It's
like,
no, there's no specificity, which is what I think of as kind of a lack of confidence. Yeah. Like, say, no.
But they're talking a big game.
These teams are going to be really good. Like, these ones, we know they're going to be good. We know a lot about these teams, and we understand they're going to be – it's like the way a school starts a Heisman campaign in the preseason.
Yeah, you got to get people's
– the schools that are confident about it do that because they want to – and they're not scared of the downside, which is that guy's not very good, and it makes it – you look kind of embarrassing at the end of it because nobody cares. And if you're confident about your product, you pitch it hard. And I just didn't get the sense they were. I mean, it should have been all over the marketing for this year that for the first time in a long time, the Pac-12 has, you know, national championship aspirations this year.
Yeah. Hey, why don't we do this? Let's take a quick break and we'll come back and we'll talk about a few more news and notes that we picked up from Media Day. Back in a minute. All right. We're back here on the podcast of Champions.
Yes.
We love the champions of the podcast. Of
we are.
It's good. One of the things we, at the top of the show or the top of the media day, Utah, like I mentioned, went first. You talked about some of the things Kyle Whittingham had to say. We did get to hear from Cam Rising also. And so that's one of the, you know, probably his news items go. His health, you know, it still didn't say specifically it was like an ACL, but that's what everyone assumes. He had surgery. Brett Keefe, like, he's coming back off an injury, but he was injured a couple months earlier. It seems like he's going to be back. So from what Whittingham said, it seems like, you know, Keefe will be fine. But for it's going to be more of a, you know, wait and see thing with Cam Rising. Now, he looked fine walking around and everything when we saw him there. He seemed in good health. But is that good enough to play major college football? We don't know. So it sounded like just you have to kind of wait and see with going on.
It seemed like they didn't know, to be honest.
Like, and like, yeah. So like, could he be available for the opener? It sounds like he'll be around. It just might not be for the first game of the season. But, you know, if you're missing that game, like, you could miss a month or two of the season, right? Like, you could miss – I mean, so hopefully he's – I mean, it seems healthy.
A whole lot of season passes very quickly.
It does.
And if you're not ready for the opener, you know, are you really ready for the next game? And suddenly it's October.
So many times I've covered – you know, you cover this sport, you cover the team, and there's, like, this guy coming off of whatever, and you're like, you think he's going to be back. Oh, he's practicing and stuff, and, like, he's not available week one, and it's like – he never plays the rest of the season.
Yeah.
You know, and it just happens sometimes where you think he's coming back, you ask about him almost every week, and he just never ends up going.
And I think part of it is the offseason feels so long, or the offseason feels like nothing happens, and the season feels like, oh, wow, it's so long. But the season's only really 3 months. And so if you have a slightly delayed rehab, like, it's just a little bit off schedule.
I'm not quite ready, and then, ooh, a little setback.
Suddenly it's November.
Yeah.
Like, 8 weeks passes very quickly, and 8 weeks on an injury timetable isn't much, but 8 weeks in a football season is 2/3 of the year.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, the hope is Cam Rising's fully ready to go, because I think take him away from that Utah offense, and it'll still be good, but it'll be more like your traditional Utah offense. And I think that's – He's the linchpin for them to compete for the league this year.
Yeah. You mentioned we mentioned Adam Munster Tiger covering Colorado. So instead of Deion Sanders, we got defensive coordinator Charles Kelly.
A second Charles Kelly today. There were two Charles Kellys.
Who was the other Charles Kelly?
Chip Kelly.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Chip Kelly. Well, he was first, actually. He was right before.
Yeah, I know. But there were two Charles Kellys.
Two Charles Kellys. It's just sort of like if you're going out to ice cream and you end up at the dentist or something, like, it just felt like that. Like, I'm nothing against him. I'm sure it was fine. Like, he had some, you know, there's some questions and, you know, he had some interesting answers, I guess, but just, it wasn't, you know, like,
it wasn't Deion Sanders.
You need, like, the Mike Leach, even like Nick Rolovich when he was around for,
I would say, so, like, vibes alone, if I was ranking the, like, charisma of the different coaches, I would say today, Chip Kelly was up there.
He was good.
Troy Taylor was up there. He was pretty good.
Energy, yeah.
Kyle Whittingham has always got that kind of I don't really want to call it homespun, but it's like this just kind of down homey, like, I'm very frank and I'll just tell you exactly what I think about whatever it is, which, you know, has a certain charm to it. But there isn't a Mike Leach. There isn't even a pontificator like David Shaw. Remember, like, David Shaw at these things where he would just – people would, like, love to line up at his lunch table to just ask him, like, these philosophical questions about the state of football. And he would always have, like, really expansive, interesting answers. He was, like, the – in a lot of ways, like, the ambassador, the statesman of Pac-12 football. Always had, like, really interesting – and not necessarily stuff I always agreed with, but interesting thoughts about, like, the state of the league and the state of the – like, he would have – nobody had a really good answer on NIL. Like, nobody had anything super interesting to say about NIL. I feel like he would have. Like, I feel like he would have had some very interesting things to say, and I thought that was missing.
There was some state of college football, you know, talk. I think Chip Kelly talked about it a little at the end. Kyle Whittingham was asked about it, and I think they both were, and I'm sure some other coaches I didn't hear talk about it, but just love the way the game is, but there's some of the things around it, like having some sort of, you know, top level NIL guidelines or whatever, like, instead of everyone kind of doing their own thing and all these states having different laws. Chip Kelly, I think, mentioned specifically, like, the transfer portal windows and the signing day and having multiple signing days and all this stuff. I feel like they know that there's the coaches we've heard, like, there's stuff wrong with college football, but they love the game. They love the action and everything. They don't care about rule changes, all that stuff. Like, everything's good, except, you know, the way we, like, manage the game outside of it was where the kind of people had issues with.
Yeah. And there haven't been any, like, major changes with the game itself that would make that happen. I would think next year there's going to be a lot more consternation about the changes in the clock rules, making it more NFL-like.
Yeah.
I think that's going to piss off a lot of these coaches. I know Chip Kelly's already kind of pissed off about
it. He didn't like it, no.
No, he just – people want less football? Is that what they want? Like, who's clamoring for this besides TV was his point.
It's like baseball made things go a lot faster with the pitch count and stuff, but it doesn't really change. It doesn't take, it's not eight innings instead of nine, right?
Well, that's the thing. And the thing with baseball is, like, I mean, who were the people who were clamoring for it to be, like, that much shorter? Like, the thing is, like, you go to a baseball game, how many people are even paying attention to the baseball game? Like, you're going for, like, the ambiance of being at a baseball game, and something is occasionally happening in the background. Unless you're, like, a super diehard fan, that's not why you're going to a baseball game. It's to experience being at a baseball game.
And people are I think I went to one or two. I think I went to one Dodger game, and I didn't even understand the pitch count. I didn't know it was, like, 15 seconds if there's nobody on, and 20 if there was. But, yeah, people would – you'd be like, man, I couldn't even go, like – between innings, go to the bathroom and grab a beer. Like, it was like you miss more time because things go a lot faster.
Yeah, and the thing is, it's supposed to be that kind of game. And football, I mean,
you're taking away plays in football.
You're taking away
the game.
Yeah, you're not taking away outs in baseball. You're just taking away a little bit of the dead time. In football, you're going to be taking away actual chunks of the sport.
Yeah,
in favor of speeding it up a little bit so that TV can, I don't know, get their windows hit a little bit easier. So anyway, but that's about next year. I think everyone, that's kind of, it seems like there's a common note being struck by a lot of people, which is that football is in great shape, but we have to figure out this other piece. And I don't know if those are marching orders or just everyone's kind of in agreement that college football is a really good product. People like watching it. It's probably never been at, like, higher demand in terms of viewership.
Yeah.
Which I think is all pretty true. I mean, look at the ballooning media rights deals for every other league to understand that, even with the death of cable. I mean, NIL and, you know, the looming reality of, like, expansion is that may kill the sport, but it's not going to be for lack of interest in, you know, pure viewership standpoint.
Right, yeah. So, I don't know, any other notes? I actually got to talk with Chip Kelly a little bit, just chatting. Like you said, he was in really good spirits. He had told me some ideas to make Media Day better. He thought, you know, just wait. There's too much waiting around. He wanted to condense it. And he kind of liked the way the SEC did it, where, like, you're only bringing three teams in a day. you know, and
what make life insanely hard for the media, but not for the
coaches. He seemed okay with that. that was good.
I liked what you told me his idea, and this is what UCLA used to do for like its like individual media days, is just make everyone available at the same time for like 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
So go up and interview whoever the hell you want.
They do that like the Rose Bowl and stuff sometimes. Like you come in and like everybody's available.
Yeah. Make every – so it's what, 12 coaches and, you know, 24 players. Sit them all around the room and, you know, you just go up and talk to whoever you want to talk to. We were talking about this, and this is – a lot of this is really inside baseball for people out there, so I don't know how interesting it is. But they used to have like at the lunches, it used to be a little bit more formalized where like every coach would have his table. Where it'd be like the UCLA table, the USC table, and that coach and the players would be sitting at that table, and you could just go eat lunch and talk to them and then drift to another table, talk to them. And it would be like that for like 2 hours. And it was kind of the same deal. They would still have their formal like dais interview, but the big feature for all the media was sitting at the table, eating lunch and talking, you know, talking shop. But also this is like a relationship building opportunity. I mean, and even the coaches say that like it's a little bit of a social function for them to like meet the members of the media, especially the national people that they don't see that often if they're new, and learn some names and kind of just get a vibe of people that, you know, media and these coaches obviously have a symbiotic relationship. So being able to like put a face to a name and, you know, exchange a number on occasion too, so you know have a little bit of a side contact.
Yeah, I asked Lincoln Riley about that. I'm like, you know, for us, it's like we get a lot of content. Like, did you get anything out of this? And he kind of laughed a little, and it's you know, being a new coach last year, it's making some of those connections and meeting. Yeah. He's like, there's national media, but there's local regional media. You know, you're just kind of meeting different people and getting a feel for that. He also talked about, it's funny, I asked him, you know, that, you know, the way George Klyavkov sort of, I asked him basically like, hey, it's like you're a short timer. And I asked Chip Kelly about this too. You know, you guys are the short timers, right? So it's like, if you're at a company and one of your coworkers like got a better job at like your competitor company, that's clearly better than yours or whatever. And you're like, he's got put in his 2 weeks notice and he's still around. And you're just like, kind of like hating on the guy. Like, so I asked both of them that, and Chip Kelly was sort of like, I'm like, dude, you get a different sense. He was kind of like, yeah, you feel that. And Lincoln was a little more like political in his answer, but just as far as like, you know, trying to take the high road. But I had mentioned that Klyavkov didn't mention USC was picked to win the media poll, didn't mention USC by name. And he said, they'll mention us if we win. And so
that's a good line.
Yeah, it was
you got to respect that line.
And he was focused on the winning part. He's like, you know, last year, his whole big thing is, and people that want, you know, Alex Grinch fired, defensive coordinator, he was just like, it was hard to imagine how much stuff was broken that he had to fix. And like to go from 4-8 to 11 wins, it's almost, you know, it's almost like a miracle just because there were so many things broken. But now that was sort of like, you know, the road, like the climbing the mountain to the championship. And like that's, you wanted to like work your way up to getting there. And his focus now is like winning part. Like,
and that's the crazy thing is that there were two coaches in the league who did basically that exact thing. And Kalen DeBoer and Lincoln Riley. That's another thing where like, I think so many of these things, if they weren't so hung up in their like, because he didn't mention USC, and look, I'm all for not mentioning USC. I'm all for it at all times, but there was an opportunity to hammer it. Like last year we had two teams that hired a new coach and immediately became elite again.
Yeah.
Those two programs are two of our premier programs in this league, USC and Washington. They're poised to have excellent seasons. Michael Penix Jr., Caleb Williams, these two guys are going to be Heisman contenders. Then you have Bo Nix, who's going to be a Heisman contender. You have the ability to say these things. You're a hype man.
Yeah.
Like, hype the league.
And you're hyping, like, USC, but you're also doing it alongside Washington and then adding Oregon. So it's not like you just only talk – if you know, you're only talking about a team that's leaving. You're talking about all of the teams, but they're still part of the league. And
yeah.
And I think you need a playoff berth more than anything before this.
I think the way they treated it last year where they were like – he was like, look, we're sorry they're leaving, but we're going to celebrate them. We're going to promote them, and we're going to, you know, love up on them. And he said that frankly. And I think that was still the approach to take this year. And it just didn't.
Seems like less of that.
Yeah. It seemed like a lot less of it. And it's just maybe last year he was operating under the delusion that it was still possible to retain UCLA. And by virtue of that, maybe have an outside shot of retaining USC. But that was insane at the time. So I don't know. Not to belabor the Kliavkov stuff. I just think there's a lot to come out of media day. I think for the Pac-12 fan generally, here's the big thing I'd be taking away from just preseason. Kind of, you know, we've now gotten to the point where we've coalesced and we've gotten an idea of all these different rosters and all this kind of stuff. And obviously there can be injuries in fall camp, but I'd be like, not to go all Yogi Roth on everybody, but I'd be excited to be a Pac-12 fan going into this year.
Yeah.
Like there's, you know, we make fun of the league a lot and there's a lot of bad football sometimes, but there's a lot of good teams this year. And then beyond the like obvious good teams, there's teams that are really interesting. Like Arizona is really interesting to me. Colorado is super interesting.
Oh man.
Like this live experiment. Can you replace almost literally an entire roster and then win a reasonable number of games? Like I think my baseline expectation for Colorado is basically they'll be last year's Arizona team, just with a much worse schedule, like with a much, much harder schedule.
Yeah, yeah.
But what if they surpass that? Like, what if they're even better than that? Like, what if they do contend for a bowl? But you got that. And then you've got, like, how far can the Bay Area schools fall? Like, how bad can they be?
But, you know, Steph, just because Troy Taylor was very good, what we heard from him, they're crushing the recruiting trail. Obviously they bring super smart dudes that, you know, one guy that like had some business, I forget what it was.
Yeah, but don't they have like 43 scholarship players right now or some crap?
It's tough, but there's excitement there. And I think when you have a coach that, what, they won three games like 2 years in a row and didn't fire any coaches, and just, it's sort of going to be like proof of, if they come in and like go 6-6 or something, like it's different, like not ass, like I think they're going to be. I mean, it just shows you how far things had fallen with David Shaw. And there were just things you could have fixed, and he was too stubborn to fix them. Just hiring like a competent coach to come in.
Yeah, yeah.
They got to go to Hawaii.
They never have an easy schedule, and it isn't easy this year.
And they play Sac State in the third game, which Troy Taylor's old school.
But I don't even want to focus on the dregs, because a lot of programs, I think, are rising out of the dregs. I think the teams that have potential to be dregs are still Cal, Stanford, and then – the thing I don't know, and this is the one where I am...
People are hating on Arizona State.
I don't know. I just never knew what to see, because I'm a real, real believer in Kenny Dillingham's offense. Like, I do think that scheme is just something that works, and it works at a profound level no matter where you are with what personnel. And, you know, it's you know, kind of an offshoot of the Mike Norvell scheme that was so successful in ASU 10 years ago. I'm really interested to see what their quarterback situation ends up looking like, what they end up producing at that position, and whether my theory of ASU's program proves to be true, that they're the most buoy-like program in the league. If they're too far down, they're going to buoy back up to 6-6 the next year. And if they're too far up, they're going to buoy back down to 6-6 the next year. Because I always think there's a pretty reasonable amount of talent in that program. It rarely falls to the levels of, you know, what Arizona, Oregon State, and Colorado fall to when they're bad. You know, Phoenix is still a big market that you can still produce a lot of homegrown talent, and still a lot of California kids like to go to ASU. So they've always got a decent amount of talent. It's a pretty hot transfer destination generally.
Yeah.
So they should be okay. I mean, I'm a believer in Dillingham. So I really think it's the Bay Area schools that are in a kind of a tough, hopeless spot. And for Troy Taylor, it's going to be one of those 0 years.
It might take a little bit.
Yeah, it's going to be one of those 0 years where you're just, you know, overhauling. For Justin Wilcox, it's, I think, very clearly his last year in Berkeley. But beyond those two programs, I think there's reason for, like, legitimate hope and, honestly, like, excitement for a lot of these fan bases going into this year.
Yeah. That's why it's going to be really exciting. And I, you know, we just wish there was some kind of deal announced so it wouldn't take away from all that.
Yeah. Cause I don't want to talk about this shit anymore.
Oh my God.
Like, yeah. I'm so sick of talking.
It could be weeks or months before we figure out what's going on.
Yeah. You know? And that's, you know, it's, some of it's just that simple impatience.
There was also some kind of, hold on, let me do the little breaking news. Stanford's president, shout out to student journalists, by the way.
I'm doing some big work of late.
Yeah, Northwestern and now Stanford. But, you know, I guess had some questionable research, made up some crap. And
like a long history of making up shit in research papers.
And he's out. And he was the, executive chair of the, the chair of the executive committee.
Yeah, this is like one of the board of directors or whatever that's in charge of, you know.
Figuring all this stuff out.
Figuring all this stuff out. And, you know, as with most people in heavy positions of power, ethical turd. But yeah, kudos to the, what is Stanford's newspaper called?
Bootleg or something? No, that was
the Stanford Daily? I don't know.
Something like that.
Whatever. It doesn't matter. Good for them.
Yeah. And that's it. Yeah. Let's, any other notes from Media Day? Like anything that you heard?
No, I do want to throw some kudos at, just generally, I thought the availability, I thought all of the schools and the league itself did a good job of making access easy. Like, we had three different formal opportunities to talk to Chip Kelly today.
Okay.
And in addition to that, he was just kind of wandering around, a lot of one-on-ones. You just saw coaches wandering around, and it was really easy to just kind of sidle up to him and say, hey. I saw Kalen DeBoer just like cruising around the hallways by himself. Like,
yeah. Dan Lanning came up to me at the dessert bar.
Yeah.
It's like, any fat-free options here? Oh, yeah. We got to talk about the desserts.
Okay.
So the
The funnel cake. So tell us.
Funnel cake. So they had funnel cakes, which are, you know, just like fried dough and whatever. But they had a crap ton of toppings, and the only themed, like, I usually like the theme. There'd be like cupcakes or donuts or whatever, ice cream sandwiches, and they would there'd be the Utah one and the Oregon State one. There wasn't a theme. They had sprinkles or jimmies or whatever you like to call them. That were colored, but I don't think they had every team, but they had a bunch of different like colors, like red and white or whatever. So that was the only sort of like team themed ones they had. I don't think they had blue and gold or cardinal and gold. So I don't think USC and UCLA were represented, but
they didn't name anything. So there was no real theming.
No, there wasn't theme, but that was pretty good. And then they had some like cannoli and some other stuff, but like post lunch cookies were really good.
So the chocolate chip cookies were top tier.
Yeah, the chocolate chip was really good. I had some other one that was okay. It looked
like anybody. So if you are some British psychopath out there, or somebody who likes this, nobody likes a crisp cookie. Crisp cookies are bullshit. I think we agree.
Yeah.
You want your chocolate chip cookie to be relatively soft baked. I'm not saying it needs to be like floppy. Like, you don't need that, though that's pretty good too.
Yeah.
But like, it needs to be pretty soft baked, and this was a beautiful soft baked cookie.
Very good. They even had ice cream sandwiches, were just like store bought.
They had this weird Oreo cheesecake thing.
I didn't try that one.
That was good. It was very good, very rich. Okay. But the desserts were good. I wish there'd been a little bit more theming, but that might have broken the bank a little bit.
Yeah, you can't afford that.
No. They couldn't afford seasoning on the chicken.
Either. Chicken wasn't very. Yeah, I didn't. I just stayed away from that. I was so hungover. There was just a lot of pasta options.
Yeah. No.
So I just piled that on.
Yeah. Ryan was creating an alcohol sandwich in his belly.
It was yes. It was a struggle bus. And yeah, whatever. But yeah, USC was early, which they're normally not. So I had to like kind of turn it on like kind of early. But you're right. There was a lot of availability. You could talk to coaches wherever you wanted, and it was a lot of fun.
It was a lot of fun. We had a good time, and now we're going to go have more of a good time.
Let's go have a good time. So let's wrap things up. Thanks for sticking with us here and our little recap of Pac-12 Media Day in Las Vegas. That is David Woods. I'm Ryan Abraham. I hope you enjoyed the show, and we will talk to you next time. Bye.